Hello, I'm Mariet Snyman. Welcome to Calm, Clear and Helpful, a weekly podcast series on taking good care of yourself and others, introducing you to a wide range of wellness professionals ready to assist and inspire. Today's topic is hormones in menopause, how to fix the number one mistake women make. My guest is Anita Hamilton-Williams, functional medicine health coach from Cape Town. Welcome back on the show, Anita.
Hi, Mariette. It's lovely to be back here again.
Now, Anita, for listeners who haven't listened to our other podcast episodes, could you please explain what it is you do?
Okay, so what functional medicine focuses on is really the creation of health. So putting in all the foundational steps that an individual needs in order to sustain health. And that differs from a conventional doctor in that what the doctor is doing is treating disease or treating a problem. And the way that I work is focusing on creating health in an individual.
As to menopause, we have done a podcast on menopause where you spoke about hormonal imbalance and how it can affect women. Could you give an overview of what midlife women may experience and why?
So are you meaning what midlife women will experience when they get into menopause?
That's right. Just as background for the topic we're going to explore today.
Okay. So what happens when a woman goes into menopause is that her progesterone and her estrogen, which are the two dominant female hormones, start to decline. And as a result of that declining, she may experience a number of symptoms. And the symptoms can vary from hot flushes, problems with sleeping, night sweats, weight gain, which is something that a fair amount of women can experience. And it's really the imbalance of hormones that cause this, and it can cause a lot of problems for women, because not only are they going through an aging process, but they're now also having to deal with the way that their body's changing through that particular stage of life.
Thank you. When you and I were planning this podcast, you mentioned that in menopause, estrogen is produced in a different way in the body. This I did not know. Can you explain further?
Okay, so let's go back to how estrogen is produced and progesterone is produced when a woman is going through a normal, you know, ovulation, when she's still in her reproductive years. So if we have a look and consider a 28-day cycle, on day one is going to be the first day of your bleeding. And on day two, if your body does start bleeding on day one, then obviously you haven't fallen pregnant. And on day two, your body then starts the process of preparing itself for a pregnancy in the next 28-day cycle. And so we start to see that estrogen slowly starts to rise. And when we reach around day 14, which is the typical time that a woman will ovulate, a follicle, which is an unripe egg, is released and is sent out into the uterus. And from that follicle, what will happen is an egg will be released. Now, estrogen continues to increase, and then just after ovulation, it starts to slowly decrease. But once the egg has been released from the follicle, then we start to see a rise in progesterone. And the remaining portion of the sac that was holding the egg is called the corpus luteum. And this is it's like a little temporary hormonal organ that attaches itself into the uterus. And this then produces the progesterone that the woman needs in order for this egg to remain viable. And the combination of the progesterone being produced from this corpus luteum and the combination of estrogen now start to increase the lining of the uterus and make it, I like to think of it like a you know, soft blanket, which was being enclosed around the uterus so that any egg that is fertilized can become implanted in this endometrium, in the lining, and then that would obviously grow into a baby. But if that egg is not fertilized, then what happens is that lining that has been made thicker to house this egg then starts breaking away. And in breaking away, that becomes the menstrual cycle. And then we go back onto day one. So we have a bleed. We lose menstrual blood for a period of a couple of days. And then we go back into the whole cycle of estrogen climbing again, sending a message, getting a follicle, and so we go on. So what's happening during the cycle is that the progesterone is being produced by the corpus luteum and estrogen is being produced by the ovaries. And when a woman starts moving into perimenopause, and perimenopause can be 5 to 7 years before you actually hit menopause. Menopause is actually defined as the day that you have not had a period for 12 consecutive months. So menopause is really just one day. After menopause is your post-menopause period. But the perimenopause period leading up to that can be, you know, anything from 5 to 7 years. And what we typically see in that is that we've got earlier ovulation and shorter menstrual cycles. We also have a lower quality ovulation. So we don't always have this ovulation occurring, and therefore we don't have progesterone being released. And therefore we may not have a full bleed. So that cycle leading up to menopause starts to shift, and we start to see things like irregular cycles or skip periods, irregular bleeding. We may have a long and heavy month and then nothing the next month and then short and light the next month. And it starts to shift because the eggs are being depleted and the quality of the eggs may also not be as they once were earlier on in the reproductive cycle. So when we move into menopause, what happens now is that the body in the reproductive years was ovarian centric, which is all around reproduction. And it moves into this phase of the hormones that are now going to be converted into estrogen are DHEA. And DHEA is produced in the adrenal glands. And we also have another hormone that is converted into estrogen in the menopause year called androstenedione, which can be converted in peripheral tissue, fat tissue. So when a woman in menopause stores fat, that tissue in the fat cells can be converted into menopause. And I think that my belief is that that's one of the reasons why we do pick up a little bit of excess weight in our menopause years. It's almost like nature is providing us with the level of estrogen that we can still continue to use in our menopausal years. And then progesterone, which was being produced by the unfertilized follicle corpus luteum, we're no longer ovulating. And so progesterone is now also being produced in the adrenal gland. And so we switched from being ovarian-centric to being adrenal-centric, which I find quite interesting because the adrenal gland, I'm sure many of your listeners will know, is where your stress hormones are produced. So cortisol is produced there. And I think that cortisol has a bit of a bad rap sometimes because we tend to think of the word cortisol and we think of stress. However, the role of cortisol is actually protective. Cortisol is there to protect the body from the effects of stress. Where it becomes problematic is when we have continual high levels of cortisol, and then eventually over time, we may see that drop, and then we have these continual low levels of cortisol. So cortisol on its own is absolutely fine. It's designed to protect the body because once cortisol is triggered, it is a master hormone, meaning we cannot function without it. We would die without cortisol in the body. And it's actually the only hormone that increases as we get older. Now, cortisol is protective in that it triggers a different biochemistry in the body in order for us to deal with whatever stress is being presented to us. So it will release stored energy so that we have energy to deal with the stress. It will make it will increase the blood pressure so that we've got blood pumping around the heart faster, so that we have got the ability to deal with whatever stress. It switches off digestion because it's thinking, you know, you're not going to sit down and eat something if you're in a stress state. Switches off reproduction. So the biochemistry of stress is there to protect the body so that you can deal with whatever stress you are facing at the time. And then the normal intention is for the body to deal and handle with that stress and then to move out of that stress state into a relaxed and digest phase. And that's where the body is in a repair phase. But if we are continually in the stress phase, we are going to put an additional load on the body. And so understanding that as we move from a reproductive phase of our life into a menopause phase of our life, looking after our adrenal glands becomes incredibly important for us as women, because that is where our hormones are now going to be made. And if you are asking your adrenals, which maybe they are already stressed, if you are asking them now to also make the hormones for postmenopause, you are creating an additional burden for your adrenal glands. And that may just be a little too much for your adrenals to deal with, and it may not make adequate amounts of hormones, which will then affect how you are feeling and how you are experiencing menopause. And this can be why women have such different responses to menopause. You know, you could line up 10 women who've all gone through perimenopause into menopause and find that each person's experience of menopause, some might have breezed through it with no problems, but some may have had dreadful symptoms. There are over 70 fairly common symptoms for women to have in menopause, and not everyone has all of them. But each woman will probably have a handful of them. There are a couple of fairly common ones, but each woman may have experienced something slightly different. And it can be largely due to how her body is able to manage and produce these hormones in a new and different way as she is moving into her menopause years.
This is fascinating. Anita, are there any other reasons why this is important for us to know?
So the adrenal glands are really dealing with a lot in the body. And so if we have a look at some of the external signals that affect what is happening in the adrenal glands, we can really break them down into four main areas. The first one I would classify under blood sugar management. And in that particular area, so these are all things that will cause the stress hormone to increase and decrease and therefore cause load on the adrenals. So first one being blood sugar management. And so here we are looking at things like poor dietary choices, timing of meals, intermittent fasting. If you're not doing it, if you just start skipping meals, in skipping meals, if your blood sugar is not already balanced before you start doing intermittent fasting, you will then trigger a cortisol spike when there's no glucose in the bloodstream, so that your body can release some stored glucose so that it can function. So if you start doing intermittent fasting without preparing your body for doing that, it only takes about 30 days, you can put a load on your body, even though ultimately intermittent fasting can be really beneficial for women. If you are not doing it the correct way, in other words, you're not first balancing the blood sugar and then moving into intermittent fasting, you can cause more bloat on that. So meal timing is important. Stress eating is also an issue around balancing blood sugar. Then low physical activity. And in fact, low physical activity can raise cortisol, but so can excessive exercise. And I will often work with some women who feel that the only way to regulate their weight, now that they've moved into menopause, is to do this excessive exercise every single day, very strenuous exercise. And that, for some women, can start impacting the way that stress is being managed and what is actually happening with the adrenals. So that's the blood sugar management area. Then if we look at another area that will increase cortisol levels are inflammation in the body. The inflammation can be caused by, it could be ongoing allergies, it could be gut inflammation, something like arthritis, cardiovascular issues. All of those would trigger inflammatory markers, and that would then cause cortisol levels to increase. Then a third area would be circadian disruption. So our bodies have a 24-hour day-night cycle. And we are meant to regulate our lives in accordance to the light that we have outside. And if we try and manipulate that, so if we, for example, if we have shift work, you know, if we totally dysregulate our sleep and our wake hours, or if we experience jet lag, or even daylight savings, we can see that there's an impact in an individual's overall health as a consequence of disrupting the circadian rhythm. But then we also have things like caffeine, which many of us may use as a stimulant in order to, you know, later, we may be working, or just to give us a boost throughout the day. Impacting a couple of other things, impacting sleep, which will obviously just be the circadian rhythm, is pain. An individual has got pain and they are unable to have good, long, deep, restorative sleep, then they would that would also impact cortisol levels. And then also sleep apnea, where we often see this if someone is snoring and you may have a lack of oxygen throughout the body, and that is going to once again impact ongoing sleep, which will then have an impact the following day. So circadian disruption is one area. And then the last area which impacts stress levels is around mental, emotional stress. So if an individual has a level of burnout, or if they are in an environment where there's a lack of control, if they are in a relationship which is not supportive, and there is this continual perceived stress that the individual is going through, that will also increase cortisol levels. And then in some instances, we also see anxiety and depression or neurotransmitter imbalance with serotonin, dopamine, that can also impact cortisol levels. So four main areas: your stress, circadian rhythm, inflammation, and blood sugar balancing. And so getting a handle on all of those, and it's not going to be problematic in each area for each individual, but identifying which areas would make the biggest shift for you, and then starting to address those areas so that as you are moving through perimenopause and into menopause, you are lightening the burden on your adrenal glands so that it can pick up the slack and start making hormones for you. And I think that we are given this relatively long runway of time of 5 to 7 years during perimenopause, where nature gives us the opportunity to prepare our bodies so that we are going to be in a healthy state as we get into menopause. And so 5 to 7 years, plenty of time to work on these things and to start addressing the sort of low-hanging fruit, those ones that are going to make the most significant impact for an individual during this time of their life.
Yes, and then one also needs awareness, and the work you do would focus exactly on that, not so, to point out which areas would require support.
Exactly. Mm. You know, there are, as I mentioned earlier, you know, you were asking me what is functional medicine, and I said it's the focus is on the creation of health, and there are 8 key areas that are important in order for your health to be really good. Often, you know, an individual has got a couple of them, no problems. We don't need to make any changes in that. But there are often some key areas that you just need to dial in and get working better for them so that their overall health is improved. And it really, it's a framework that I use to help the clients that I work with, because there is so much information out there on social media and just in print media and everywhere about this is what you need to do to be healthy, you know, and you need to do this. And it's quite overwhelming. You know, if you consider and had to adopt everything that everyone told you, you would drive yourself crazy. Mm. I think it's just far too much. So to break it down into a simplified framework to say, right, these are the 8 key areas we need to work on. When you've got steps in place to manage those 8 key areas, you will provide the foundations of health, regardless of what age you are, regardless of what stage of life you're in. And then as you do get older, you may have to dial in each of those areas, but those 8 stay the same for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Anita, getting back to these shifts that occur in menopause regarding the production of hormones, what are the most common problems that can occur as a result of this?
So 2 of the most significant changes that I notice in the clients that I work with are around managing blood sugar. Now, what happens, I wish I had an image that I could quickly pull out and show you, but I will try and talk through it. So when we eat any foods that we eat, which has got carbohydrates in it, carbohydrates will either have sugars or starches in them, and these will break down into blood glucose. So the typical pattern that you would see when somebody is eating foods that contain carbohydrates is that their blood sugar will start off, let's just peg it at between 4 and 5, if we're talking about millimoles per liter. So if you had to do a blood test and the number that comes up on the blood test, let's say it is just below 5, which is a normal, a good, healthy level. And we're going to assume that this particular person is prior to menopause. So starting just below 5, and then they eat something for breakfast that contains carbohydrates. And so the typical pattern in blood sugar that we would expect to see is that from just below 5, it starts to increase. It might go anywhere up to about 7. And then it starts to decline. And we wanted to get back to the starting point of just below 5 within around 2 hours, maximum 3 hours after that person has eaten. That's a good cycle. And then we have a regular blood sugar. We eat something again. Our blood sugar levels start to increase, and then they gradually and slowly come down 2 to 3 hours after we've eaten. Now, what we see in a menopausal woman is that, first of all, this is based on a clinical paper that was released in 2022. What we see in a postmenopausal woman is that, first of all, her starting glucose level is actually higher. So we're starting above 5. And then when she eats the same food that the premenopausal woman ate, her blood sugar levels spike from just below 7 to about 7.5. So they spike significantly higher. And then it takes her a full hour longer for her blood sugars to get down back into that regulated phase. And this is often because of this pattern in that a woman is not as sensitive to insulin and her blood sugar levels are starting off at a different place, even though she's eating exactly the same food. This is often why we see an increase in weight and why we have to focus and start to shift the way that carbohydrates are managed in the body. And so when you don't have good stable levels of blood sugar, then cortisol is going to be triggered because it will be releasing stored forms of glucose, because we need this continual supply of glucose in the bloodstream in order to provide energy, and particularly to provide energy to the brain. We need glucose for the brain. The body uses about 25% of the total body glucose to actually help the brain to function. And so when we don't have stable levels of blood glucose, we are then triggering cortisol. And so cortisol is going up and down. And what happens is every time cortisol goes up and down, we are going to be storing fat. And every time the blood sugar drops, we're going to be moving into a state of low mood, potentially craving something sweet generally, brain fog. And so we are on this dreadful roller coaster of high levels of blood sugar and then low levels of blood sugar. High levels of blood sugar, and if we start from early morning, we can be on this roller coaster all day. So we are storing fat, we are having low moods, and we are picking up excess weight as we are going along. So that's one area that I see is around blood sugar management. And then the second problem that I notice for women is around low nutrients. And the low nutrients are often as a result of poor digestion. We certainly do see for a woman as she starts to get older, her ability to produce good levels of stomach acid and digest her food may be impacted, but often protein levels are low or iron levels can be low. If a woman has been bleeding excessively in the lead up to menopause because she's been losing a lot of blood. And I will often see patterns of nutrients in a blood test where I'm seeing, four or five different nutrients that woman may be eating in her diet, but for whatever reason, usually due to poor digestion and assimilation, she's not actually able to use and extract those nutrients. And then what we see over time is that all of our neurotransmitters, our hormones, are built from the nutrients in our food. Our body runs from the nutrients in our food. And so when we don't have nutrients, it's a little bit like trying to bake a cake and we don't have eggs, and we only have half the amount of sugar. Eventually, when we put together that cake, it may turn out and sort of look like a cake, but it's not going to rise, it's not going to taste the same, and it's going to be a bit of a disaster. And eventually, something similar can happen with a woman who has got low levels of nutrients. We can't detoxify correctly in the body. We can't make the hormones we need to produce in the body. That starts to impact how an individual sleeps. That starts to impact stress. And we are on this cycle of disease starting to creep in as a result of something relatively simple and easy to resolve as poor digestion. And then when the body doesn't have the nutrients, obviously that will also raise the cortisol levels. That is how it's impacting the body. So those two key areas are vital to get on top of when you are in that perimenopause, menopause years.
What is the best way to address this, and where should someone start?
So the first place I would start would be around addressing blood sugar. If you are able to eat, because of the way the blood sugar changes from being premenopausal to menopausal, in taking a lot longer to come down, one of the first places is to start cutting out your snacks and eating three meals a day. If you find you cannot cut out a snack because you get hangry, you know, the combination of hunger and angry, or if you find that you are craving, or you are shaking, or you are exhausted in the afternoon and you need a nap, that is a clear indication that your blood sugar is not balanced. But for somebody who is able to give up the snacks, then do that. If your snack, for example, is, let's say, a piece of fruit at midday, rather have that fruit at the end of the previous meal. Have it at the end of breakfast or have it at the end of lunch. You want to reduce the amount of times that your blood sugar is increasing and staying consistently high. So the first step would be to stop snacks and then to look at the quantity where you can start reducing some of the carbohydrates in your diet and start to minimize the carbs that you are eating. We do need carbohydrates as menopausal women. We definitely do need them. But maybe the balance of when you are eating them, are you having high carbs at the end of your day just before you're going to sleep, which is not ideal. It's better to eat your higher carbs earlier on in the day so that when you are going to sleep, you don't have these stored forms of carbohydrates as you are sleeping. I have a healthy hormone recipe collection that I've put together, which I am happy to share with your audience, and they can get some ideas on recipes and healthy recipes and lower amounts of carbohydrates in those recipes to help them to start introducing healthier meals that help to balance blood sugar.
Oh, great. Thank you. Never mind the audience. I would like to get my hands on those.
It's coming your way.
Thank you, Anita. So is that a link?
Yes. I will send you the link and perhaps you can just include that in your show notes.
I will.
Your podcast notes. And then if someone's keen, they can just click on that and get it.
Thank you. I'm very excited because I've seen wonderful recipes on your Facebook page, but we will come to the social media in a minute. A quick note on what I do. I'm a content entrepreneur creating podcasts and articles on living a happier and healthier life. By interviewing coaches, therapists, and other wellness experts from over the world. You'll find this content on my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, and it's there to help you find just the right helping professional when you need one. The section Up Close and Personal on my website offers you a glimpse of the person behind many of the experts I feature. If you're a wellness expert keen on getting more in-person or online clients, or creating worldwide awareness of an issue close to your heart, let's talk about co-creating a podcast or article, or perhaps featuring you in a South African magazine. You'll find more information under Services on my website. To each listener, no matter your age, occupation, or where you live, how about creating your very own personal audio recording with me as a one-of-a-kind gift to someone you deeply care for? In this private interview with me, you can express your love for your partner, leave a legacy to your children or grandchildren, honor your mum or dad or a mentor. The possibilities are endless. To find out more, just click on Gift Podcasts on my website. Now, back to my guest. I'd just like you to recap. So we said How to fix the number one mistake women make. How would you describe the number one mistake women make in menopause?
So for me, the number one mistake women make in menopause is not understanding the impact of stress on their adrenal glands. And stress encompasses many areas. So the blood sugar balancing, calming inflammation, making sure there's no circadian disruption, so your 24-hour cycle is working well, and addressing mental emotional stress. Those four key areas impact your adrenal glands, and we want to make sure that we have eliminated excessive load once we move into menopause so that our adrenal glands can pick up the production of our hormones. So I think it's underestimating the impact of stress in our life when we move into menopause, because it's so vital for good health.
Thank you. Where can listeners learn more about your work?
I am on social media. You can find me on Instagram at Anita Hamilton Williams. You can find me on Facebook also there. I'm on LinkedIn. I've got a YouTube channel which I've just started, and I'm sharing recipes to that. And I do have a website which is in transition at the moment, which is also anitahamiltonwilliams.com.
Good. So once the website is up again, then I will include it in the podcast notes, and I will also attach the link to other platforms, including Spotify and Apple and Google Podcasts.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Anita. Before I let you go, Maya, may I ask you a fun question?
Yes, sure.
Okay. We're going to the realm of the imagination. If, Anita, for a month you could have flowers delivered to your door every day, which flowers would you love to be surrounded with?
Sure. I think in my 30s, I might have said white lilies. Those were always my favorite flower. But as I've got older, I've really come to appreciate orchids and have become a bit of an orchid collector on a very small scale. I just love they last for so long. They are exotic. They are absolutely stunning. So I would say I'd love to surround myself with more orchids than I currently have at the moment.
Yeah, and they just create this sense of wonder.
They do. They do. And I love the fact that they last so long. I wish they had a scent. That is the only thing about them. It's a little disappointing, but I still love them.
I never thought of that. It's true. Thank you, Anita, for sharing this information. It's completely new to me, and I really appreciate the way you show how it can be managed and in very practical terms. So thank you very much.
It's my pleasure, Marie. Thank you for inviting me. I really love chatting to you about this.
Yes, and before you go, I think we should just mention that you have quite a focus on women in perimenopause and menopause, not so.
Yes. In fact, those are, in my practice, those are generally the women that I do work with primarily, although I've also started working with a couple of young women also experiencing hormonal and menstrual problems. But my focus primarily is around women in perimenopause and menopause. And it's not just the transition and the hormonal shift, but also how do you look after your health after you've been through menopause, because a couple of things change as a result of that. We are more prone to, you know, issues with bone health and cardiovascular health and brain health. And so it's looking at women's health in the menopausal years and also the lead up to menopause.
Thank you. And to our listeners, it was good of you to join us. If you found this episode helpful, please share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za for this episode's podcast notes and for free podcasts and articles on how to live a happier and healthier life and have more fulfilling relationships. To follow me on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn, just search for Mariette Sneeman Journalist. The podcast series, Calm, Clear and Helpful, is produced by me with original music by Mark Marie Sneeman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9.